Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, however you may have gotten here. My podcast through iTunes, downloading it from our home base at internetadvisor.net. We're glad you found us because we are here every week doing our program. And this week we're focusing on educational tools for teens and tots and a whole lot more. We're going to be talking about, of course, the release of the iPhone 5 that came out this week and lots of other things. Microsoft has a few woes that we'll discuss as well. But it's a great show lined up. Stick around. We have said this before, folks. And we've got to get a camera in here in the breaks because you would have watched Gary Baker rather smartly walking around the room and saying, did you see what I have in my hand? It's an iPhone 5.
No, that's not what I said. I said you were bragging about your new Windows phone. And I said, well, let's see. How does it compare to the iPhone 5?
Well, we can talk about that. Gary Baker, of course, in studio here, my partner for 15 years now. Ed Rudell as well. Good to have you, Eddie.
You know, I'm still sitting here with my 7-year-old phone and my host. No, just kidding.
Yeah, no, you
don't. Hey, a lot of people are very happy with the phones they have. No need to go anywhere else. And Cal Carson as well is here. He's still having a grin on his face. When you saw Gary put out that iPhone 5, it was pure jealousy. Tell me it wasn't pure jealousy.
It wasn't that. He was just amazed.
No. I have an iPhone, so I don't have to be jealous.
Yeah, he was just
amazed. You have an iPhone 5?
See, now here's the difference. Let's talk about that for a second.
Oh, here we go.
Really good. Go ahead. I'll let you go first.
But I will tell you, the reason I have it is because we made a pretty wholesale move to the AT&T network.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we bought a number of phones for...
When you say we, you mean...
The Society for Manufacturing Engineers.
So, yes. Not we in the family.
Yeah, you know, no,
we're on the air here.
The family was already on... I was on AT&T.
Okay.
So, and what I was up until...
What network was that?
AT&T.
Oh, actually,
I switched to Verizon because I finally gave in and used a company phone. And because we were only on Verizon when I got there about a year ago. And so we made the move back to AT&T. And it's great because the faster network, really the 4G network that they have today, and they announced that this week, so it was all coming together.
Yeah, what's interesting, I have AT&T now, and I just this afternoon switched to the Windows phone, which I'm testing out. This is the Nokia 900 with the Windows 7.5, I think, is the operating system on it. But it's interesting that I have been using it on wireless, but it went on to the AT&T system, and it's 4G, according to this.
It is.
Faster.
Isn't it
blazing
like
fast.
And Gary told me this last week. I was telling him that a friend of mine no longer is doing contract work for AT&T, and he had to switch over to T-Mobile. And Gary corrected me because you said they made how many thousands of changes in this area?
Well, they made 1,800 changes
throughout
the last 12 months, AT&T did.
In this geographic area.
In this geographic area. And in addition, then now have put in the LTE ultra fast 4G network.
Right.
So,
so we're what,
and that was really
we're talking
what
about.
We
very
wanted,
fortunate.
We have
and
people
that's
listening.
We wanted to get.
We wanted to say we have people listening all across the state of Michigan, and right now we're outside of that as well. But we're talking about Southeast Michigan in particular with the 4G system for AT&T. Am I right?
But all over, you know.
Okay, so like Grand Rapids.
Their whole network will be built out, countrywide, nationwide by the end of next year. But they have what? 3,000 cities, something like that, the 4G network already. So unless you're driving in the hinterland, you'll be able to get 4G.
Regardless of the device, you're going to experience a real boost in performance if you happen to have one that can jump onto that 4G.
And
I'll testify to that today.
And to some extent, the iPhone 5 is just catching up
yes.
to where some of the other Android phones have already been, mm-hmm. which was on the 4G and other places. So
and in a lot of other ways. And, you know, Cal, I want to spend some time a little later on in the program talking about some of the changes that have happened in the iPhone 5 and also the operating system, the iOS 6, which came out that is actually on the iPhone 5 and that, for instance, I had an iPhone 4 you can upgrade to. Won't get into all of that right now. One thing I want to ask you, Gary, as you picked it up, what were your first impressions of the iPhone 5?
Well, it doesn't look a whole lot different, except it's longer,
right?
But it's same width. It's narrower, so it's not as deep, and it's lighter. And that was
about half
really nice.
The weight almost, I think. Yeah. It feels significant.
It feels
significantly lighter when you get hold of it. Cal, have you had a chance to get your hands on one?
No, I have not.
Gary, would you pass that to him just so he can hold it?
I tried to give it to him, and he was just laughing so hard that I had gotten one.
Let me tell you a funny story. Okay. My daughter works at the Apple store.
That's right. Yeah, she does.
And before
there are a lot of really nice people that work there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And the funny part about it is on Thursday night, she calls me as she's leaving work, and she goes like, "You won't believe it." I go, "Tell me." She goes, "They're lining out. And camping out
they are.
Already.
Oh, it's summer. This is a Somerset.
Yes.
Indeed, yes.
And they had to leave out of the mall and go out in the lot and sleep and wait until and come
Thursday
back
night,
and line
yeah.
up again. Yes. And then on Friday morning, before they opened up, they got the cases of the new iPhones out, and then they said to all the employees, "Would you like to, you know, touch a couple of them before we let them go?" So it was just a fun time for all, I'm sure.
It's funny you mention that because when I was in the AT&T store this afternoon, I was getting the SIM switch between my iPhone and the Windows phone. And I met a young woman who was a friend of one of my grandsons who's now in college, Michigan State, freshman year there. And she was a little down because she hadn't been able to get her iPhone. She has got it promised to her October the 2nd it comes in. But it was kind of interesting seeing her there and seeing that she had gone to Somerset. She had gone to the AT&T store out there. There's just none left in the stores right now. And it's not that there aren't, they're in the pipeline, but you're going to have to wait to get them.
Unless
you're Gary Baker.
Well,
here's a good one that you'll really love, okay? Me and Ed work at the same place, and there's a guy there that works with us. I'll tell you the whole story when we get back.
We'll hear it a little later on in the program. We're going to take a break for just a minute. Along our educational theme, coming up in just a moment, we're going to be talking with Dr. Azarias Ritta about just a remarkable tool to help you. If you've got a teenager, you really need to tune into this or know somebody who has a teen in the family because this is a really important step for them to help them get off on the right foot online. Coming up on the Internet Advisor, so don't go away. Well, the confetti is settling and the emotions are dying down a bit now that people have handled the iPhone 5 that is in the studio right now. Just teasing. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson are in studio here with me as well and got a great program lined up ahead of us. By the way, hello to our folks that listen to us on WJRWAM 1340 in Grand Rapids. Glad to have you along with us as part of the Michigan Talk Network that's out there. And we'll be saying hello to some of the other folks who are listening to us on our affiliates as well. One of the things I think if you have a teenager, you know, or now even tweens they talk about a little earlier, that they are very savvy. They're plugged in. I think in each one of the guys in the studio with me who have kids who have either that age or who have grown through there, and I'm thinking of it in terms of my grandchildren, know that kids are online. It's fraught with all sorts of dangers and concerns, and it's very easy to do some dumb things very quickly and very easily stick with you for a long time.
For adults, it's hard to make sure you don't do something stupid. Yeah.
And it's really something to stick your foot in your mouth when you're in a classroom, but if it's written...
Yeah. And if it lasts forever
on the internet.
Well, we have somebody here who has developed something that's designed, and I love this, kind of proactively to help these young people to start off on the right foot. And I'd like to present Dr. Azarias Ritta, who is with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, who is with Meritful.com. Dr. Glad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, how does Meritful address this problem of these young people who are coming into this online world and help them to get off on the right foot? How do you do that?
So you're right. So there are two things happening right now. One, kids, teenagers are generating a whole bunch of content that's out there and is probably going to be there for a very long time. And the other very important thing that's happening is admissions counselors or colleges, employers, are increasingly trying to find more about their applicants.
So they're mining that data.
They're Googling them. Yep. They're searching for them. And the sort of stuff that's coming up is not necessarily helpful. And this is the reason that we worked on Meritful. And Meritful is a place where students can document and share the activities, the projects, and their accomplishments, the sort of things that reflect very well on them. So if you know about LinkedIn,
right.
It's sort of like LinkedIn for young people and for teenagers.
So kind of creating a network?
Creating a network and a portfolio of the good things that you have done.
Oh, I like that.
And you know, and that's one of the things I envied about some of the other Boy Scout parents we were involved with and some of the kids. They had a portfolio going back to academically to the kids when they were in sixth grade. You know, when they come out of fifth grade and they joined choir or they did volunteer projects. And I envied them. And even after all these years, I never documented that for my children. And I wish I did.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is
really
exactly.
Cool.
Exactly, yeah. So we want to make it very easily accessible for everybody. And, you know, students are spending so much time. They're doing so many activities, so many projects. It's almost required, you know, if you want to go to a good school. But there is no uniform way to put this together and present it in a very nice, polished manner, which is what we're trying to do. We're going to, you know, give students a platform to talk about, you know, the very good things that they have done. Because a lot of students spend a lot of time doing all this stuff. You know, it is very important to present it as well so that others can find it and appreciate it. And
okay. Now, I just want to tell people, as you're listening to this, you can link to this off of our homepage at internetadvisor.net, and it's meritful.com, and it'll be right there in the article. Right.
You know, I was trying to help my daughter as she was, you know, going through high school years and getting ready to try to be accepted at one of the colleges she was interested in. Actually, she was only interested in one. So it was, anyway, good luck when she got in. But it, you know, she says, Dad, you know, the resume's nice, and I guess I'm going to have a professional resume when I get out, but it just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't do what I need it to do for me. I can't represent me the way I want to with all of the new media and her flavor of new media. And she created a website to do that, right?
There you go.
So if you can't create a website, or even if you can, maybe this is that substitute, right?
Absolutely, because the sort of things high schoolers do cannot be expressed in bullet points,
right,
which is the way we do it in a resume and a CV.
Sure.
Because it's not necessarily work experience that defines you. It's, you know, the robotics team that you have been part of, the musical you did the lighting for. And you have to use things like pictures and video to fully express and capture it. So, you know, what Meritful enables you to do is have a very rich way of expressing yourself while keeping it professional. You know, you don't want it to be, you know, sounding here and there, et cetera.
You know, one of the things I see on here is that this isn't just for students. It says it's a professional network for students and mentors. So talk about the mentor relationships.
So we think of mentors as teachers and counselors who are already spending a lot of time with students. And one way that, you know, these teachers and counselors can get involved, for example, if they have a class project, they can help their students, you know, establish and build this portfolio while having a great way to share the results of their class activities with the rest of the class and with the school. And the way this happens actually is really cool. You know, if you have a project and you put it on Meritful, you could have your counselors and your teachers give you feedback on that particular project, sort of like mini recommendations or testimonials. So instead of just, you know, writing up about stuff and say, I did this, now you're going to have other people, your mentors, your peers even, giving you feedback on this, adding the credibility of, you know, what you say you're doing.
Now, is this open, or is this like password protected? You have to give out a password if you want somebody to see it?
Over the summer, we had a closed version where we were testing it, but just this week, actually, it's now open to Michigan students.
Oh, great.
So that they can sign up for themselves, and this is in time for the...
When you say Michigan, you mean within the state of Michigan?
Within the state of Michigan,
okay. Not University of Michigan, because I know you guys bleed blue and maize.
Well, I saw Mary Sue Coleman had a testimonial on your site, Dr. Side.
Yeah, we want to get it ready for this application season. You know, it's coming over the fall, and if you are especially a senior... looking at applying to places, this is just a great way for you to tell your story and set the conversation.
So now, how young can you be? If you're a student in, say, ninth grade or even junior high, can you get on and start a portfolio?
13 and above is 13. The age we have now. Mm.
All right, so maybe eighth grade.
Eighth grade, yeah.
Oh, okay. Eighth grade.
And you want to establish these connections early on if you can.
Right.
You know, we have sorts of different sorts of mentors, including, you know, admissions counselors at different places. So, you know, junior year or sophomore year, you want to start establishing those relationships.
Well, I find interesting about this is, we've had other people on who have been talking about how to protect kids when they're on the air, and just some great comments. And some even rules of the road to help the kids. What I find this is that in addition to that, this is also saying, you know, you can really build something very positive. Ed, you were talking about that in terms of your own kids, you know, that you can start gathering that stuff right now in a way that will be a real positive thing. Have fun. You know, have fun wisely with your texting and YouTubing and all the rest of that stuff. But here's something positive you can do, which I think is really neat.
Yeah. I mean, children will come up with a half a dozen, maybe even a dozen milestones in the course of a year. Major things that they think are really important, something that their parents encouraged them to do, something they volunteered for, something they did at school. And this is a great way just to document that and organize it in a manner that benefits you in the future when it comes time to choosing a college and you want people to see how professional you are and how worthwhile you are to go to a school or go for scholarship.
Because it's become so competitive now. Dr. Rita, how did you come up with this?
So a couple of things. One, I used to teach over graduate school at a local high school in Ann Arbor. And it's very interesting that you bring that up. You know, a lot of students try to become your friends on Facebook. And when you do so, you see a number of things happening.
Sometimes you really see what's going on.
Something you'd rather not see happen.
That was my experience. And then I actually spent time working at LinkedIn out in Mountain View, California.
Oh, you did? You worked at LinkedIn?
I worked there for a while. And, you know, those two sort of crossed paths. And the observation was we could really have a similar experience, but designed for, you know, the high school audience and sort of things that define them, but sort of bring those two observations together.
Now, what brought you back here then?
Love Michigan.
Love to hear that. And we are hearing that more and more when it comes to developing software and startups. People are being drawn back in here. Is this where you gathered your funds?
We've been funded through Spark Ann Arbor.
Excellent.
Great ecosystem that's developing. It's very encouraging.
Dr. Rita, thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Azarias Rita with Meritful.com. You're going to stick around, right?
Thank you very much.
We're going to be talking about hopefully getting a call in from Israel shortly that we can talk with the young people out there who are going to be developing an educational tool for tots this time, not for teens. So stick around for the Internet Advisor. Another great segment coming up. Once again, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and welcome to some folks out there in Lansing at WJIM AM 1240, listening to us on Sunday afternoons. Thank you very much for being part of our lives here. And by the way, if you have any kind of questions about your computers that you'd like to have answered, we have an email that you can get us, that Contact Us form that's on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Just click on that, and we'd love to answer your questions as well. So please do send them in. So welcome to you and to all the other folks on the Michigan Talk Network out there who are our affiliates. Well, we've been talking about education and technology today, and Dr. Azarias Rita was just with us talking about Meritful.com, which is for teens. We're going to step down the generations a little bit towards younger children. And our next guest is calling us from overseas right now, as a matter of fact. Danny Van Buren is with us to talk about something called Webby. And Danny, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Hello.
It's good to have you with us here on the program. Danny, your focus, I understand that you and your wife, Rachel, developed Webby, and that's W-E-B-E-E, and there's a live link on our homepage as well, with younger children in mind. I have a picture of a console there, but if you could, what's the concept behind Webby and younger children?
Well, Webby is a unique online educational platform aimed at kids between the ages of 1 to 5, and it's basically a platform that combines three components. The first is a toddler's special keyboard with only four colorful jumbo keys. The second component are dozens of online educational games for different age groups. And there is a third component, which is a parental monitoring system that tracks the child achievements in each game and each skill.
Oh, I love that. Now, you, how did this begin with you? Tell us the story of how it began with you and your children and your wife, Rachel.
Well, actually, it's a family story. My wife, Rachel, is the one behind both the idea and the technology. She's, besides being a mother to our three kids, Rachel is a software engineer who worked in the past as VP R&D and CTO for many technology companies and is always looking for innovations. Well, while observing our kids, she noticed that the little ones were always frustrated with the fact that they couldn't approach computers like their older siblings and parents. So she realized that the main obstacle was basically the interface of keyboard and mouse.
Mm.
So what she invented was the Webby keyboard, followed by the technology that enables using it with an online educational website.
That is absolutely fascinating. By the way, folks, if you look at our homepage at internetadvisor.net, I took the image off of the website and I put it up there as well. You can see it. And if I saw it correctly, by the way, Danny, in one of the images before, that keyboard, it's kind of sits over a regular keyboard, am I right? In front of a TV?
It's basically a replacement for the regular right. keyboard. If you're using a laptop, it sits on top of the laptop right. and it protects the keys. From being damaged, and if you're using a PC or desktop, sure. you just replace the regular keyboard with the Webby keyboard.
I love that idea of protecting the keyboard with this. Isn't it great?
Well, you know what? What I think is kind of unique is he made it for little fingers, and I'm thinking, Foster, with your big fingers, you yes. could even hit this.
The
right?
fact, yeah, the, and the fact that you probably would spill coffee on it would be okay. This was designed by a mom. Am I right, Danny?
Sorry, I missed the question.
It was designed by a mom, somebody who understood kids. Your keyboard.
Yes, we use a team of early childhood development experts. We understand that kids need something big to press.
Yeah.
And this is the concept where to make it as simple as it gets for toddlers.
Yeah. Go ahead. We have one of our folks in studio here wants to ask you a question as well. Go ahead, Cal.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a question. Now that you have the hardware created, what array of software is available for this particular device for kids to learn with?
What we created was a full package. It's a full solution. It's not only the hardware, it's also the software. And the technology behind the scenes is to use this device as a plug-and-play platform. But the main issue, the real business is the website. We created both the website, which is filled with dozens of games that are developed in order to work with this keyboard. And at the same time, there is, behind the scenes, the technology is something that we, at the same time that it is as simple as it gets for the user, it is very complicated in terms of what we created. It's a cloud-based architecture.
Mm.
And this technology enables toddlers just to progress and promote the skills while using this simple keyboard.
Mm. Okay, so it seems like the software is actually online as opposed to something you have to load right. on your computer. So my second question is it a subscription service? What does it cost for the hardware, and what does it cost? Is there a monthly subscription charge that you pay?
What's the question? What for the cost?
Yes.
Yeah, first there would be the cost of the hardware, but then do you have a subscription-based service?
No, the business idea, the business model is to sell the keyboard as a package with 10 free games. And then you have something similar to the App Store where we can purchase additional games which we keep creating all the time.
I see. Okay. Kind of like the App Store for those sure. of you. Now it's growing more and more, not only with Apple, but with Microsoft as well. Now, we should mention, by the way, excuse me, just as a point of information for our listeners, Danny, you're on Kickstarter right now, which is a crowdsource way of gathering funds, right?
Yes. We think that Kickstarter is both an opportunity for us to not only get funds to help finish the development process, but also to approach early adopters. We hope will join us in developing this unique platform. And I would like to emphasize that while discussing this, we are creating additional ability, and I mean the SDK, which is the software development kit that enables third-party developers to help us develop additional games. And another feature, which we call an EDK, which is an educator's development kit that enables parents and educators to create offline materials based on our online games.
Wonderful.
So if people hear this this broadcast, they say, wow, this sounds like a great idea. They follow the link from our website to your website, and then they can turn around and go to Kickstarter. There's a link off of your website, right, to
Kickstarter. And on our homepage as well.
That's right. You have 129 backers already that have asked for and pre-ordered some of the devices, some of the keyboards, but this is a way for you to help raise enough funds, right? So they could come in, help you finish this project, and then be the first adopters.
Yes, we hope this Kickstarter campaign will help us finish the project. We hope people will join us both in adopting this technology and fund the development process.
Well, and 129 backers have already signed up, so yeah. It must be working.
Signed up, and we already managed to raise more than $35,000, and we hope we by October 10th we reach our goal, which is at least $100,000.
That's wonderful. Danny Van Buren is our guest here. Danny, you're calling us from Israel, right?
Yes, we are an Israeli-based company just starting our way in the U.S.
Now, I was wondering, how many of those supporters are outside of Israel? I mean, is this international support you're finding for this idea?
Yeah, I think it's they're from all over the world. About half of them coming from the States, rest from Israel and many European countries.
We have another educator in studio here. I'm doing this cold, so it's kind of off the cuff for him. But Dr. Azarias Rita is with us. His background is from Ethiopia, of his folks. So it's kind of interesting that both of you are helping us out here with this educational platform. But he's an educator. Give us me some thoughts as you hear this, as you hear Danny talking about this, Dr. Rita.
I think it's very interesting. You know, I have little cousins that are always taking my phones and my laptop and working on it. And the idea that you'll have real software design, but with interfaces that, you know, kids can understand and track with toddlers. I think that's very exciting. I hope it takes off. I'm going to check out the Kickstarter for Webby as well.
That's
I don't have kids, but...
but it's really great. Now, do I understand, Danny, that this is also an open platform? Did I see that this is open, the development of the software is open?
Yes, it's an open platform. I think we are we intend to really make a change in terms of using technologies that are already implemented for adults, for young kids, and we would like many others, other developers and educators to help us create additional content and games for this platform.
You know, folks, this is interesting. This is a quick comment here. What I find fascinating about this is not just somebody trying to sell you a product, but really a concept and inviting people all over the world to get involved in that and to tailor it to their particular culture and educational system and language and the way the kids learn. I think that is exciting to hear, Danny, not just a product, but a project to get involved in. And that's Webby. And again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see on there it says Playing to Learn, and we have a highlight on Webby. You can go to their site directly, but then you can also, it says down below that the program is open for investors on Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter, you'll see a lot more information even there about the background of Webby.
And then you find his keyboard, which is an international design, right? It's red, green, yellow, and blue big buttons. You know, any kid in any language can figure this out.
And there's a couple adults like me may go for that as well. Danny Van Buren, Shalom, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And we wish you great success in that as well. And as Danny Van Buren calling us from Israel, he and his wife, Rachel, have developed something called Webby. Back in just a minute, we're going to grill Mr. Baker about his choice of phones for his company. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, and a special welcome to the folks listening to us on WNEM AM 1250 in Saginaw, up there in the Bay, on Sundays. Glad to have you with us here as part of the Michigan Taught Network. You're one of our affiliates, and delighted to be able to have you with us as well. By the way, don't forget that through email, you can submit your questions. And when the second hour of our program, and you folks hear both hours of it, we'll be answering some questions that people have sent me an email about. Well, this is the week, and of course, some of you are hearing this has been recorded, and you'll be hearing a little bit later, but September the, help me guys, 20th was when the, wait, Friday, yesterday, 21st.
21st.
Was when the iPhone 5 officially launched the lines that have been waiting. You described them, Cal, out at one of our shopping centers around here where your daughter works, the Apple Center at Somerset Mall. People had lines. I stopped at an AT&T store on Woodward Avenue here in the Detroit area, And they mentioned they had had lines as well when it opened up on Friday.
And it's just a phone.
It is. It's just a phone. But it's also just going to make Apple a ton of money because it is. It's very popular. Sales are going very well. And one of the people who helped boost that sales a little bit is our very own Gary Baker, who is the CIO, Chief Information Officer. Is that the correct?
That's correct.
Title for the Society of Manufacturing Engineers here in Detroit. And because
and
of that, you have a position where you can order and decide on phones for your system.
Well, we ordered quite a while ago,
yeah.
Knowing that something was coming. So we just said, when the new phone comes out, we'll buy and we'll buy so many.
Now, here's my question, though, for you. As an IT director, because generally speaking, it's been said that the enterprise, your businesses, were going to be very slow to adopt the iPhone because of some of the problems of integration, et cetera. So,
well, and security, not being able to support them very well and manage them on an enterprise basis.
So why are you swimming upstream with...
Well, first of all, we didn't move everybody, and not everybody will move. And we've had a number of people that said that we would really like to stay on an Android system. Mm-hmm. We were almost all Android before, with just a few of us had gotten iPhones. So this was a way to kind of balance between the two. It was really precipitated by the fact that we were moving from Verizon to the new AT&T
network. The carrier was more the basis.
And because we were doing that, we got a pretty nice incentive to buy out the contracts. And it's no different than anybody else can get, right?
So it was
it's
an economic,
the same thing.
Economic incentive.
But because of that, now we were able to put that money toward a phone instead of toward the carriers. We also had about half of our supplier or half of our people that we do provide phones. All their contracts were coming due within about a 45-day. We were talking about doing this in the summer, and we said, let's wait till this point in time so that we had all.
And you got
people.
The newest technology when you were doing that.
Yeah. And we figured the new technology would come out in the fall, and we would give people. Right. It was interesting because we thought we'd give people a choice, and there were a few people that took them. But it was interesting that a lot of people, because we had denied them the opportunity to get an iPhone in the past, except for a few people that got special permission from the CIO, like me, and the
he gave himself permission,
and
Cal.
The CEO. No, actually, he didn't have one. He's going to get one this time.
Okay, so. Ed, you were going to say something.
Well, you know, the question you asked, one of the questions you asked was, you know, why are corporations adopting this technology so quickly, where in the past they were so hesitant? Mm. We've, if you recall,
it's not quick, right?
Well,
second 5 years.
Yeah, I was going to say most companies didn't start adopting the iPhones until the iPhone 3, I believe,
right.
Because that's when they enabled a certain level of security in there and encryption, and now it's just old hat, basically.
Okay, and then you, of course, working at a corporate level at HP, you deal with this kind of security issues as well.
Yes.
And matter of fact, Cal, you're kind of the Apple specialist, I understand it, at HP.
Allegedly touted.
And a good one, I
He is
add,
so busy. It reminds me reminds me how busy I was in the 90s, you know, where everyone would, you know, come to you for any simple questions about PCs or the mobile phones,
right?
Or your palms and stuff like that.
Exactly.
No, everyone goes to Cal
because
they're making these migrations to the Mac environment or the Apple environment.
So, Cal, from a corporate end, and again, we're just kind of focusing on the IT aspect of this or enterprise aspect of this. What are some of the challenges of bringing iPhones and iPads into a corporate system where you're trying to protect the system and also enable people to use a device they want?
Well, you have to remember that originally these devices were designed for the consumer first.
Right.
And because they were designed for the consumer first, the challenges of security, while important, aren't as great as it is for an enterprise situation
where
you have, you know, company secrets, company, you know, established stuff that needs to be protected for, you know, business type reasons. So now you have a device that is been embraced in the consumer market, and everyone wants to, you know, BYOD or bring their own device into the enterprise market, giving challenges to people like Gary, saying, hey, I'm used to using this. I want to use this because what you're offering me is not as smooth or as easy
or
slick
light
or whatever,
yeah.
or light, mm-hmm. or all those things that come along with it. So now that gives Gary's group or his people the challenge of, oh, okay, so now we have to come up with a way on how we're going to secure this. Those applications may not have been written for that sort of stuff. So now you have to start pressing Apple and the various other third-party vendors to develop stuff to be able to protect these machines in those environments.
Do you find Apple responding? And you're an old hat with Apple. Do you find them, like with the new iOS 6, the Internet Operating System 6 that came out that is on the new phones, and we who have iPhones upgraded to it, and like on my laptop as well, do you find that that answers some of these issues, or is that still not quite there yet?
Apple works a little bit differently than others, and in some ways it can be difficult to get the type of situation you want. But when it's all said and done, you get to the bottom line. If it's something that's really important and needs to get done fast, they're going to take care of it because there's a number of people who are depending on that type of solution to be able to do the things they want to do.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's basically how it works out. And that's like any other business, you know. The more people yelling, the squeaky wheel gets
the more, right. More people like Gary in a corporate situation who are saying, let me have X number of phones. And with some corporations, mm-hmm. it could be thousands of phones.
Well, you know,
it's going to make the difference.
Well, I was going to say, we always brought up the analogy is that, you know, these hackers and virus writers and Anonymous, they won't be going after Apple until Apple hits Wall Street. Right? Because of all the corporate, I mean, all the documents that are on Wall Street and the financial reports and confidential data. Well, they're now being pressured to hit Wall Street. Can you imagine a large corporation saying, going to Apple, I'd like to order 90,000 MacBook Airs, please? Mm. You know, and that's not too far around the corner.
No, not at all.
It will be coming.
And matter of fact, Microsoft is hoping that happens in October and November when they release the Surface, which will be their laptop with, you know, it's actually a tablet with a keyboard, mm-hmm. which will be it's been alleged it will have the full Windows 8 on it so that you will have a lightweight platform for a full operating system. Nothing, you know, scaled back. That's what Microsoft is hoping for.
And
the
enough
major corporations that have their platform will say, give me 90,000.
Yeah, and enough horsepower to be able to use the Office Suite.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. Other impressions, just quick first impressions. Cal, let me start with you as an Apple user. I know that even though this is going to be after we've done this program, you have a Mac Group meeting coming up on Sunday.
Correct.
And they're going to be talking about the cloud. I bet most people are going to be talking about iPhone 5, but we'll get to more of it coming up at the beginning of the next hour. But just quickly, you've been using iOS 6, have you?
I have held back from it, believe it or not. I'm normally the sort of person that looks for that .1 or .2.
Okay.
But a lot of people who have gone that way, including my daughter, are very happy.
I have too.
And so far it's been working out well for them. The migration's been pretty smooth and slick.
Right.
The only complaint I've heard is from the mapping that they changed from Google to the new one.
Right.
But so far, so good.
All right. Well, we can talk a little bit more about that. Second hour of the Internet Advisor is coming up. Hope you get that. You can download it from our website at internetadvisor.net and listen to it on your local radio station, otherwise on the Michigan Talk Network. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Ed Rudell. We'll be back with a second hour to answer questions from listeners who sent us email and maybe even talk to a few of them as well. So stick around for our second hour coming up next.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, one of the co-hosts here. And the conductor of the bus, or the train, if you will. And with me, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson in studio. And this is the part of the program we tackle your problems. It's tailor-made to answer your questions you send to us by email. If you go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, you simply hit the Contact Us button, put your question in there, and give us a little contact information, and we'll be on our way to answering your question. Welcome to hour number two of our program. That's the one where we tackle your problems. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Ed Rudell in studio here as well. Looking forward to tackling some of your issues. When we do our live program on our flagship station, WJR, 760 AM in Detroit, we take calls there. But on days like this, when we're preempted on our flagship station, what we do is we use your emails. And it's a very important way for you to get your questions into us. Matter of fact, if you happen to be one of the folks who's listening to us on one of our affiliate stations, like, for instance, WKMI, AM 1360,
50 in Kalamazoo on Sundays. It's time for us to get your questions in. So simply go to internetadvisor.net, and the Contact Us form is in the right-hand corner. Click on that and enter your information, and we'd be delighted to tackle your problems as well. You know, one of the things, guys, I'm seeing more and more of, and matter of fact, we're going to be talking about that in just a moment with our first caller, somebody who sent us an email about his cell phone. We were talking about this in our last segment a little bit, guys, but have you noticed, and Ed, you were talking a little bit about this, that in the mid-90s, you were getting all the questions about then the not only the computers, the desktops, you know, what's yep. going on with Windows 95 or Windows 98, whatever it happened to be, but then things were also being added in like personal assistants, the PDAs, yes. the Palm devices, mm-hmm. and that whole sense of what was a computer was beginning to expand at that time, wasn't it?
No, exactly. And they wanted them to interact together. Why can't I just connect these two together? Why is it so difficult? And it's just because you get engineers that develop it and they just don't, you know, think through it all the way, I guess.
Are you seeing that too nowadays in some senses, Cal, that we're shifting away from questions even about desktops and laptops? Now, are we getting more questions about cell phones?
Well, I think because we need to, as a society or and as a technology, quit calling them phones. Because because when you list down all the things that they do and what most people do with them, phoning is, especially for younger people, phoning is like the last thing they do with the thing.
They don't really, do they? They don't use them as phones.
I mean, they'll text in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
They'll surf the net. They'll do everything. They'll listen to their music and everything like that. And, oh, by the way, I think I have to call somebody, but let me text them so that I can remind them I'm going to call them.
That's right. Make sure they're there so I can call them and not waste my time.
And these are truly the digital assistants that we were trying to achieve or envision in the 90s.
Isn't that interesting that Palm, in many ways, I think, was well ahead of the curve? If you remember the Palm Pilots,
sure.
Yeah, I had one early on. I think Gary, when we started our program almost 15 years ago, were they out then?
They weren't ahead of the curve. They were on the front end of that curve.
Yes,
absolutely. And
in terms of really and putting because, it in people's hands,
because it didn't. When I think of ahead of the curve, that means they tried something and it didn't work, and then later somebody else did it. I think this was pretty evolutionary from the Palm Pilot. We think of when some of the smartphones came out, and we're thinking, oh wow, the smartphone, some people that hadn't been part of that initial curve, but this was just a PDA with a phone and you put them together.
PDA meaning personal digital assistant.
Right.
Right.
And you put them together with a whole lot more. And then Apple did innovate when they came up with the iStore.
Isn't
right?
it?
With the apps. And that that really made that really made a difference. Right?
I think
because now third-party developers could get in, and anytime you open it up, like that to third-party developers, you get all sorts of innovation that you just can't have with a single group.
Right.
Because you can't think of everything yourself when you envision this, but when you open it up to these developers, they'll come up with ideas that you just never thought of. That never even occurred to them.
Yeah, sometimes you go, really? That'll sell?
Yeah.
Sometimes you go, yeah, I didn't think so. And other times you go, wow, how did that sell?
Well,
but it does, right?
Cal, what Gary was talking about was really that revolution that took place in 2007 where the iPhone appeared suddenly and took, as you said, that concepts that were out there and put them together in a form factor that became so accessible to people.
Well, the BlackBerry before that.
That's
right?
true. That's
it was
true.
It was the Palm, the BlackBerry, the iPhone, and then all of the Androids after
the
that.
The Android right? after right. that, really.
And that's really been the curve. And now with the iPhone 5, Apple's caught back up to the leading edge of that curve again.
And if you remember, RIM had their own BlackBerry store for applications.
That's right.
Before the iPhone.
That's true.
Just no,
But it was all
very limited.
It was enterprise oriented.
One of the things I have heard said, and it'll see if it bears, see if you think that. If you agree with this or not, that it's not so much about the devices anymore, because you can get pretty much the functions on all these things to one extent or another, but it's about the ecosystems. It's about the whole support systems, the application stores. And for instance, Cal, when I get the money, I'm going to be buying a refurbished Apple TV, the latest model, so that I can wirelessly now, I can get rid of a lot of cables and wirelessly put anything that's on any of my devices
right on my TV screen. Boom.
Well, it's a package deal now.
That's exactly it.
It used to be, well, you can buy a piece here and do this, buy a piece here and do that. But if you want to do it all, there's a total package that has to be developed by the person that's delivering you not only the product, not only the service, but a convergence of all those things into one slick, easy-to-use system.
And we have to say Windows, by the way, is hoping to do that in October when they launched Windows 8, mm-hmm. their new platform.
Well, I mean, it's just not, like you said, the ecosystem. It's also the social networking, too.
Yes, all of that now being blended together into one. Okay, I tell you what, let's see if we can... we're getting so close to the break. Let's just chat a little bit more. We've got Dominic with us. We're going to be talking with him about a cell phone issue that he has, which is kind of what triggered it. We're also going to be talking about a bunch of other things that people have brought up in terms of the emails that they have been sending us. Eddie?
You know, while we're on this topic, one thing, I found an article this week, and I just could not realize how much money was in accessories. Because if you went to buy iPhone 5 accessories the day you got your iPhone, you wouldn't have been able to find them. Or very few accessories. $6 billion a year revenue on iPhone accessories out of a total of $20 billion for all mobile phone.
And that's just
That's cases. Yes, accessories.
We'll be back with our caller in just a moment. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, second hour, the hour we answer your questions, and we're going to start doing that right off the bat. Before we get there, hello to folks listening to us on WKLQ AM 1490 in Muskegon. You get a couple of shots of listening to us on Saturday nights and also on Sundays around midday. So delighted if you've tuned in to us or downloaded us off the internet at internetadvisor.net. Or subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. Glad to have you along as well. And by the way, you can participate in the questions here simply by going to internetadvisor.net and clicking on that Contact Us form and then loading in the information there. We'll get to you. Now, let's go to our first caller right now, and that is Mr. James, who was with us.
Yeah.
How you doing, James?
Not too bad.
I understand you have a question about cell phones and cell phone reception. You may have heard us talking in the first segment a little bit about how this is a computer program, and normally we would get, up until this point, a lot of questions about computers, but now phones are handheld computers. So tell us what your concern is.
Well, what I've got is I've got an inexpensive Samsung flip phone. Nothing fancy.
Gotcha.
And what happens is outside, if I walk right outside on the front porch, I get great reception. If I go to the second floor, I get great reception. Anywhere in a backyard is fine, but on the main floor of the house, it goes from one bar to nothing. And
wow.
I bought one of these cell phone boosters,
yeah,
and that didn't work. I ended up sending that back. I moved it around on the first floor, different areas, and tried to get it. And it had two antennas with it, and it didn't do any better.
So is this like a unit that you picked up at Radio Shack for like $60 to $80 that goes into your antenna?
I picked it. Actually, I picked it up through a mail order, but it was about $69 is what it was. It came
with the booster
two antennas.
You're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to put those upstairs or even outside, right, if some of the external ones. Is that what you're doing?
Well, it didn't really specify. It said as long as I had a signal, this would increase the signal.
Yeah, gotcha.
Anywhere in the home.
Yeah.
So
what?
Since I did have a signal, but it just never got any stronger.
Yeah.
Now you've got this booster in the house, just like you have the telephone, correct?
Correct.
Let me ask you a question. How old's your house?
The house is quite old. We're probably looking at about an 80-year-old home.
You got that wonderful ceramic tile in the bathroom?
Yeah.
And probably lead paint on the walls.
Well, see, the problem is that lovely ceramic tile in the bathroom. And then you take your plaster that you have, if it's the natural plaster, which is lath,
yep.
which has
yep.
wire
right.
embedded in it as well.
Yes, yep. the mesh.
And
right.
then
got a cone of silence.
You take all that and put it together, and it just like takes your signal away. So as Gary said, the only way to make that booster work for you is that you have to do one of two things. Either go up to the second floor of your house,
put it right
open up your attic and put it up in your attic, position it up there, or put it right by the window. So they can be able to pick up a signal, and then once it picks up the signal from outside, it'll boost it on the inside.
That is interesting, Kelsey. I thought it was just that old hardened pine, but you're right. All that mesh that's embedded in the plaster would do that.
And the lead paint.
Yep.
You know, also, it all contributes, right? It all takes the signal away just a little bit more.
Hmm.
Well, that's what I did. I mean, I moved the antenna to – I moved the one antenna that's supposed to be the outside antenna
yep.
to the outside.
Okay,
I actually mounted
okay,
that on the outside.
Okay, all right, excellent.
And then I brought the then it comes through and it hooks to the box, and then the second antenna is the one that you're supposed to keep inside.
Right,
It still didn't help. It still didn't help.
So here's what's happening. You're on Metro PCS, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and they use the Sprint network. Do you have friends that have a Verizon or AT&T phone that they could come in and see if they get a signal inside your house?
What I'll do is the next time my daughter comes in, I will I'll check and see what server she has and ask her. You know, we'll use her phone and see if it works any better.
See, the other thing, all different. They all are. You know, they just work differently in every cell.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that you can do is that you could either nag Metro or Sprint, and they will give you a booster to put in your house and will not charge you for that booster.
Well. And that's if you nag them.
Yes.
I visited one person who was Sprint and lived in Sterling Heights, and he didn't nag them. He just queried them and said, how can I make the signal stronger? He had to pay $120 to hook it up to his internet router at home.
Oh, man.
And him and his neighbors have great signal now, you know, but he had to pay for it. But yeah, I like Cal's idea.
You shouldn't have to pay for it.
No.
And you just nag them and say, look, you guys are supposed to be delivering me a service. I've been paying for months. I haven't gotten a service. So I know you have boosters. I want one of your boosters.
Yep. And it actually connects to your home wireless router in the back of one of the ports. And then it establishes a connection. And then it asks you to turn on your phone. And then you and your neighbors have great signal after that.
Oh, I love it. So you kind of create a node.
A node.
And James would create a node in his house.
Yep, it's like a mini cell tower.
Yep. I love it.
And it goes through the internet and establishes it right to T-Mobile.
Because that's where the Metro is serving it up anyway, through the internet. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, James.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope that works for you. Let us know, by the way.
It's
a very good suggestion. All right. Let's see. Got next caller here. David. Welcome. You're looking for a replacement for iGoogle. We probably should tell people what iGoogle is first. But first of all, welcome to the Internet Advisor, David.
Thank you.
So, what is it that is iGoogle for people who may not know what that is?
Well, I'm not sure. I think it's a. I'm not sure, but I believe it's part of Google.
Right.
Where it's like my own homepage.
Right.
That instead of just signing on with Google and it says you're signed on, but it looks identical, iGoogle has it set up exactly what I want with my a list of my emails with one line down the middle, list of, and I don't know if they're called bookmarks or...
You can do any number of things. You could have temperature on there. I used to have sports scores on there. I say used to because it's a service that Google is now ending. So your question was, when Google pulls the plug, which I think is at the end of this month. Am I right, guys?
I think it's a month or so away.
No, I think November 1st. I thought it was for another 8 months or a year yet.
November 1st.
18 months.
November 1st of 2013.
Okay, so we still got time.
We've got another well over a year. But your question is there something else that I can go to in the meantime? So I'm going to ask the guys here, what do you guys use as your start pages?
Well, I don't use iGoogle, so I don't have to worry about this. But there are a lot of suggestions, right? I use my MSN.
Okay, and, MSN.
And just because I tested it one time, I walked away, came back, it was still on. I never got around to moving it, and I got used to it.
Right.
And I liked it.
Right.
And it does what I need.
You know, how about you, Eddie?
I'm looking forward to using Windows 8 as my replacement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because my Metro interface, the Metro interface, tiles.
Yep.
The tile interface.
You can't use the word Metro anymore because it's... Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
But that interface will the tiles will basically do the same thing. The live tiles will allow me to. That would be my interface to the.
I have a Windows phone that does exactly the same thing.
It'll have my emails, calendars, my social networking, news items flashing across. I just Googled and I read an article a couple days ago that talked about this and like, what am I going to do when iGoogle disappears?
Right.
And they get, 10 alternate replacements that you could potentially use for iGoogle. You know, one of them would be Yahoo.
Yahoo.com.
Another one would be a start website called UStart.
How about NetVibes?
You know, my AOL, if you were an AOL subscriber, AOL's done this for years where you customized your homepage. If you're a Comcast customer, you could customize your own homepage there.
That's right. Good. Yes, Comcast. In other words, David, do you have an internet service provider?
Yes, I have Comcast. Comcast.
Okay. Well, Comcast has a start page like that. I think Comcast.net, I believe it is, which will do pretty much the same kind of thing
so
for you.
Yeah, there may be some limitations because, you know, there Google was pretty innovative in that.
Mm-hmm. UStart would be another one. There's a great site called DreamCore, DreamCore.net.
Oh.
And they have a good article, 10 Possible iGoogle Replacement Alternatives. And they go in and tell why you'd want to use one over the other. Right. And so, you know, it's a good way to get started looking at, and you might try a couple of these. You know, Yahoo, it's, you know, my Yahoo, my Earth, my OL.
I'm curious, Cal, you haven't said anything yet. How about for you?
That's because I don't use one.
Oh, doesn't use one.
I just go to my homepage, it's macgroup.org. It has my link to my email. And then, you know, if I need calendaring, I do it locally on my machine. And
you can tailor made much, pretty much anything. David, I hope that helps you out.
Yes, I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. And thanks very much for giving us a call as well and hooking up here. Hey, we'll be back to answer more of your emails coming up here on the Internet Advisor in just a moment. Hello there, and welcome once again to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell and Cal Carson, your posse in studio. A lot of techspertise here, helping to answer your questions. And by the way, those questions get to us through your emails. And you can get it to us by going to internetadvisor.net. And on the homepage there, on the upper right-hand side, there's a Contact Us button. Click on that. And just send us an email.
And you know, the beautiful thing about email is that a lot of people say, well, I don't want to call into the, you know, the show because I'm shy, I'm nervous and that sort of thing. You don't have to do that with email. You can sit there in the comfort of your own room, type away, and no one's going to look at you or hear you. It's just a wonderful one.
And don't worry, we've seen all the spelling mistakes. So don't worry, we're not going
to
see.
But the problem is you got to give us enough information because usually we have to ask more questions. Right. So if you're going to send us an email, you got to include all the information.
At least, you know, I'm running Windows 7. I'm running Windows Vista.
Right. And then what kind of machine? I'm on a desktop. I'm on a laptop.
It's so many years old.
I'm using electricity. I'm using kerosene. You know, whatever it is to make that machine run.
The gerbils. Chipmunks, the gerbils, right.
But the whole point of the matter, to be serious, the more information we have, the better equipped we are to be able to give you the appropriate response that you need so you can continue to compute happily.
And we do this most often here, but we will answer email throughout the week. So.
Yep, exactly. And by the way, when we're not on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit, where you can call us, this is the only way you can get the questions in. And by the way, it makes it great for folks who are listening to us on our affiliates and every place from Grand Rapids to Muskegon.
And you know, you don't have to be listening to WJR to call us from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. every Saturday. We're here.
Right. We're here. That's right. The big point. Yeah, we're here anyway.
And if you're driving along and your town doesn't have the Internet Advisor, you tell your local radio station, get that show. We want to hear it.
Through the Michigan Radio Network. First you can talk network. That's where we're at. Okay. You know, we've got somebody that sent us an email, and we thought we'd reach back out to him. And we've got Gilbert with us. Gilbert, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How you doing?
Very good. Very good.
I am delighted to have you with us. Now, you sent us kind of an interesting question. You've got a piece of music you really like on a piece of email. And you want to know, how do I get that somewhere else besides that email, right?
Yeah, I'd like to get it. Well, really, I'd like to get it put on a disc.
Okay. What is the piece of music? I'm just curious.
It's 1950s.
1950s music that you'd like to be able to save somehow for yourself?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, it's on YouTube. Okay. Yes. So you got the link to YouTube?
I don't know. It just came up on my email and it said it was YouTube.
Okay, now that's important because you don't necessarily have a sound file there, which would be like an MP3 file, right?
Yeah. So he probably doesn't. Right. I mean, it's probably going to YouTube.
Right.
And it's web-based music.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a little more complicated. I'm glad we found that out because in some ways, if it were like an actual piece of music, like an MP3 or a .wave or, you know, some of those audio formats, you could then pretty easily burn that directly onto a disc. But now you have a different situation. And as a matter of fact, you have a situation, I think, that most people run into when they receive music from friends. It's actually a link to someplace else and YouTube.
Yeah, and I'm not sure about the copyrights of that either. Are you able or legally obliged, or can you copy those? And now, there used to be utilities to do that, but a lot of them have received, you know, takedowns, stop and desist from, you know, the RIAA.
Aren't those the Rippers? Am I thinking the right thing?
Well, Ripper is a technology, is a generic term that people use when they want to be able to extract music from one type of media source to another type of media source.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's illegal.
Right.
It's just a terminology to use.
Now, one piece of software, because this is YouTube, that means it's probably a video and music at the same time. Mm-hmm. So what I've used, I found a piece of software that's free. I love free.
Oh, yes.
And it's called Freemake Video Converter. Freemake Video Converter. So, and what I use this for is I convert my home DVDs, you know, from the camcorder or from my phone.
Yeah.
And if I want to put them on DVD and give them to my parents up north, because they do not have internet access, I use this. It allows me to convert from videos that I have on my camcorder or phone to a DVD. Now, what it also allows you to do, you could paste a link in there, so you could copy the link from your email, and you could paste it in there, and it'll make a DVD for you. So if it happens to go to YouTube, it'll copy the YouTube video and burn a DVD for you.
It's called Freemake.
Freemake Video Converter, and from freemake.com. So you might want to try that.
Did you catch that, Gil?
It's a Freemake Video Converter.
Yes, and you can, if you want, just go online and Google Freemake. That's one word, by the way. Freemake. Freemake Video Converter, and then you'll be taken to. There's actually
that .com after that.
Well, you can either go to freemake.com, okay? That's their homepage. Okay. Or you can Google for the other one, and it will take you to, different sources to be able to download it.
Yeah.
But freemake.com is the homepage for that particular converter. And it's free, and it will take all sorts of audio files in addition to
videos.
Videos as well. You can go to iPod, iPhone, PSP, Android, rip and burn DVDs, convert to flat. I mean, it's all sorts of things you can do with it, both directions.
Yep.
It's really a nice tool.
Yep. And what it should allow you to do then is to copy, what you do is you copy the URL that's in the email, and then you just, when you launch the utility, select paste, and it'll tell you whether or not it allows you to, if it's allowing you to copy that video and to burn it to
DVD.
Let
you know that.
Cal, do you have any other suggestions?
Well, I've never used it before, but I did come across a tool out there called listentoyoutube.com, and it works pretty much the same way you're just talking about. You paste on their website the URL to
it's web based, so you don't have to download any software.
No.
I like that better.
You paste to that website the URL in the box to that YouTube video, and it will create an MP3 file for you that you can download.
I like that. Now, what is that?
I've never used it before, but it's called listentoyoutube.com.
Yeah, I see it there. Listentoyoutube.com. Okay. By the way, folks, I'm going to post these links as they come up on our homepage after the show. So we'll try to have this. As you're listening to this, you may not have been able to take it down. You were driving or something like that. I will try to have these available for you on our homepage as well, so you can download that.
Yeah, now that's kind of nice, because there's a lot of choir, like in my son and daughter's choir performances, where that are posted on the internet. I'd like to have audio of those. So that makes perfect sense. I like that, Cal.
That is really excellent. So, Gil, have you got those things?
Yes, I do. Freemake.com and listen to YouTube.com. Right.
Yep, and I think Cal's is a better alternative. And then, so once you have that MP3, it's going to ask you to save that somewhere on your computer. And are you familiar with how to burn or how to make that into an audio CD that you can listen to in your car or pass to someone else?
No, not really.
Okay, let's go over that then, because that's a good point.
Now, what type of computer do you have?
I got an HP.
Okay, so it's running Windows. Do you have software on there that,
I would probably think something like Roxio.
Or Sonic.
Or even the Windows Media Player
even
that
Windows
came
Media
with your computer,
yes.
with your operating system. What kind of, are you running Windows 7, Windows XP?
Yes.
Windows 7. Then you have a Media Player, I believe, on there, right?
Yes.
You have a Windows Media Player on there.
Yep, so what you're going to save that file to your My Music folder on your Windows 7, And when you and you want to have the ability to play that after it's saved, you want to make sure that you can still play that that file that you've just created with your Windows Media Player. Then you should. Then you'll have the ability to burn that to DVD. Although, you know, Cal, are you familiar with how to do that?
I have not used that function.
I have not used that function in years. Put it that way.
Yeah. When's the last time you really had to burn something?
Yeah, because I always use Roxio or Sonic. You know,
most of them, I'm going to guess this, guys, that if, for instance, Gil, if you get that MP3 file, if you right click on it, it'll say open with or burn. I think there's a drop down menu. And if you just simply say, I want to burn this to a DVD or CD
or copy it to CD
or copy it, you know, then usually the word burn is usually there. Then you just click on that with the highlighted item and it'll open up the appropriate software. With whatever happens to be running on your computer, I'm going to guess.
And Windows 7, I believe, includes the ability to make audio CDs as well.
Yes, yes.
Using the media player, so they've integrated that. So it's
and you may get a question that says, do you want to burn this as a data file, or do you want to burn this as an audio file? Do you want to leave it open so you can change? Just say, I want an audio file, and leave it at that.
And another thing that I found out here, if you do a Google search on how to burn a CD Windows 7, Online Tech Tips comes up with a complete process that will walk you through it and
step
show you
step.
Exactly how to do it.
Excellent. So you'll have a step-by-step process there for you, Gil, okay?
Google takes the, and you can burn what?
Well, we'll tell you just a bit. We're going to put you on hold and we'll repeat this for you off the air, but essentially you can find a step-by-step procedure for doing that process we talked about. So we'll get to you in just a second. Hey, back in just a moment with some more of your questions and an old friend of mine, Mary. We're going to see if we can get to her sound problems. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, and I want to thank, by the way, we've been having fun with Annie Nichols, who is our producer here. Thank you, Annie, so much for being the great person that you are. She helps us to answer phone calls and get us in contact with our listeners.
She has heard so many problems answering the phones. Annie, you could just come on and tell us about problems, and we'll answer them, right?
But
that way they don't even have to come to us. You just answer them, and she's nodding her head behind the glass.
Actually, today she didn't hear any problems. She actually heard a compliment, and it was really, really nice. Someone called and said some nice things about it.
Hey, Richard Luzinski, thank you so much for being our engineer here as well. And for the rest of you, by the way, who have sent your emails in. It's interesting. I was just looking at, we've had some questions already come in as we've been doing our taping here of our show. When we're preempted by football on our flagship station, which is WJR 760 AM in Detroit, you don't hear us live on the air there. And some people are sending us emails saying, you're not on the air. We actually, every Saturday, however, do record our program. And we're a part of the Michigan Talk Network. So we're heard in all those other places, as I said, Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, Muskegon, Kalamazoo, and a whole bunch of other places around the state. And also on our homepage at internetadvisor.net, by Sunday night, we have the podcast up there and you can download it. And if you subscribe through iTunes, you'll just get it delivered right to you when you're, however you aggregate your podcasts.
I got to tell you, this term flagship station, you know, and then this past week was Talk Like a Pirate Day. You know, we should all just came on the air.
How did I miss that? Talk Like a Pirate Day?
Oh, yeah. Oh. It's a national holiday every year. I think it's on either the 19th or September.
It's one that you know he would know about.
Talk Like a
Pirate. Were you going to say something, Ed? I'm sorry.
I'm just dumbfounded.
I got to tell you, though, you know, this deep voice of yours, this whole Barry White persona.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
I can see why the girls are all happy.
I've never hit such low notes. I mean, I used to pride myself. I used to be able to sing three different octaves. I haven't been able to do that in 20 years, but I think I could do it now. I went down a whole register.
Yeah, but hopefully you get over this whatever bug you have. And
I don't think I could stand listening to myself with such a low range anymore.
Hey, guys, one of the things, a friend of mine, Mary, we'd hope to talk with her, but we'll get into the question so she can listen to the podcast and get some help on this. She has a problem with a sound card or driver. She's not sure which is the problem. The sound skips and once in a while will be clear and then skips uncontrollably. It sounds like a buffering problem. She said she went online and she found some drivers to download, but she wonders if that will be safe or advisable to download onto her computer. In other words, she's got a sound problem so that when she's on her laptop, Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen on the desktop. But on the laptop, when she is, like she goes, for instance, we were talking about a sound file earlier on. And, you know, wanting to listen, it starts and then it stops or it gets garbled and then it comes back. And she says, is that a problem? And what do you think, guys? Is it a problem with a driver in her computer? Is the problem on her computer or is it with the source of the sound out there?
Well, she has another computer that she can test that same source with. That's the quickest
and
thing.
And it seems to work there.
Okay. The second thing is it never hurts or it should never hurt to go to the manufacturer's website and then type in your make and model of your computer and then see if they provided, you know, select your operating system and then download updated drivers or the original drivers that shipped with your computer for the sound card or the audio drivers for that card. That never hurts. I mean, I've done that. Even on computers where, you know, there's problems playing video, and I'm like, well, you know, sound and video are kind of close. I mean, I'll replace both the video drivers and
it's
the sound drivers.
You know what? Can we do something here, guys?
Software drivers.
This is gonna be kind of simplistic for some people, but what is a driver? Just to help people.
It's a piece of software that allows Windows operating system to channel the audio or video to for the specific hardware. So it's written by the manufacturer of either the computer. Or the who manufactured the sound card or the video card.
Or the DVD drive. Or the DVD drive. Whatever it happens to be.
It's software that allows the Windows operating system to talk to the hardware. That's all it is.
Right. And so, Cal, those are the DLL files you see, for instance?
They could be executables.
Yes. Oh, they could be executables as well. Okay.
Yeah, I think, and then other, were they playing this music off the internet?
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing I would probably suggest them to do is they may want to clean up the temporary internet files.
There you go.
They may want to reboot their computer so it cleans up their caches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That computer that's having a problem may have not enough memory, so therefore they may want to shut down some other programs that they may have running so it allocates more memory for that.
You know, and I asked her, and I didn't get this, if it's a netbook, and that was a craze for a while back. You know, when
it's a netbook?
I was saying, if it is, I haven't.
Yeah, you haven't found it, sure.
Yeah, okay. But if it's a netbook, which is one of those little tiny things that were so popular because they were lightweight, was before the Ultrabooks and even the MacBook Air came out, I think, that a lot of people liked them because they were so tiny. But the problem was they were really underpowered, and they didn't have a lot of RAM in them. So that when you started, and this is, I think, what one of you was saying, when you got a lot of other programs running in the background, then I think you get a demand on memory that may be a problem at that point. Am I right?
Yes. And also sometimes when you have a virus or a Trojan on your computer and you're using, if it's web-based music, it could cause a problem. So you may want to, you know, download something like Malwarebytes and go to our website, internetadvisor.net, go to the toolkit on the top and search for malware protection. And in there, our first listing in there is Malwarebytes. It's a scanner to remove malicious software on your computer. And because if you have malicious software on your computer, it's doing illegal operations. It can cause all sorts of stuttering on your computer. Not only poor CPU performance, but poor video performance, mouse movements, keyboard actions, sound. It can interfere with all of that. So check for malicious software on your computer. And the other thing is try a different web browser. If this is web-based music that you're doing, download Google Chrome or Firefox.
Hey, let's use this. So, Mary, I hope those ideas help you out. Let's use this as a jumping-off point to talk a little bit, Ed, about what happened this last week with Microsoft with the problems with the Internet Explorer.
Yeah, Microsoft, a security firm, notified Microsoft of a zero-day virus or a vulnerability, a zero-day vulnerability that they anticipated someone could write a virus in within 24 hours, and it would probably be on the network. It took advantage of all versions of Internet Explorer and ActiveX. So basically, a lot of people were saying, don't use Internet Explorer. A lot of corporations, a lot of security firms were saying...
An entire country told its citizens, we don't want you using Internet Explorer.
Yeah, basically.
But now, how often does this happen?
Every other week. No, I mean...
I mean, it does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it really
A lot of people were ringing the bells.
Why is this so unusual?
It's not. It's somehow not. It hit the main press and
hit the news cycle.
Slow day.
AKA slow news day.
Yeah. Yeah. And Microsoft did release a patch. They released a fix or within the same day that they received this. This is how you take care of this.
Right.
And by the way,
disable this feature.
By the way,
they released a patch in two days.
It just goes to show you that, you know, people that don't pay attention all along, and then all of a sudden pay attention to one little thing, and they just go,
For those who are concerned, however, if you go to internetadvisor.net on our homepage, as our Internet Advisor takeaway, we try to do this every week to have something you can use that's free but will be of value. I put a link up there to the Microsoft security patch, information about that. So you can get linked to that and download it. You should be, if you're getting regular updates on your Microsoft system, if you say automatically download updates, there is now one that's been released that should be automatically doing that.
This was theoretical. Somebody was bouncing along. They said if you do this, and then stand on your head, turn around, jump on one foot, you know, somebody could actually do this. And they could, right? But it's theoretical so far.
Yeah, so far, fortunately, theoretical. But the other thing they said, and I think you just brought it up, Ed, was we always recommend have a couple of browsers. Have more than one so that if something happens with Chrome or Firefox or whatever you're using, you've got another alternative. Guys, that's it for this week. Thank you so much, folks out there. Annie, Rich, thank you again. Cal, thanks for being here. And Ed and Gary, delighted to have you guys with me. My name is Foster Brown. Thank you so much for joining us for the Internet Advisor. By the way, we will have a lot of these websites we talked about up on our homepage at internetadvisor.net that you can click on our show notes to find out more about. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will be back here once again next week with another version of the Internet Advisor. Until then, safe browsing, and don't forget, you can get your question to us right away at internetadvisor.net. Take care. Have a great week of safe surfing.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.